Hi, listeners. Welcome to a new episode of Worlds Collide, the podcast where I talk to people who moved abroad. And so first things first, I wanted to see if you could be so kind and give me a 5-star rating at wherever you listen to this podcast, because firstly, I would appreciate it so, so much. And secondly, it would help immensely to reach a wider audience so more people can hear this podcast. And also, don't forget to push the follow button in the corner of your app so you will be always notified if there's a new episode dropping and you can listen to it right away. So much for that. And now I just wanted to give you a short introduction to this week's episode with my guest Richard. Richard and his wife, they decided to leave the US for various reasons. And we talk about why they chose the Netherlands as their new home. So this episode has also a lot of logistics. So if you are wondering about moving to the Netherlands and I'm not so sure about how to do it, then listen up closely, because this is the right episode for you. But anybody else, listen to it too. All right, here it is. Here is Richard. My guest today is Richard. Hi, Richard. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for being on my podcast. So where are you now?
I'm in Breda in the Netherlands.
Where is Breda?
Breda is in the southern part of the country, outside of the Randstad, which has all the cities that you have probably heard of. And it's really close to the Belgian border. Okay. The province is in the Catholic part of the country, which is kind of interesting because that creates its own unique culture compared to what you would find in the rest of the Protestant Netherlands.
I have no idea.
Oh, yeah. So those cultural things you find out when you move to a place. I've been living in the Netherlands for almost 2 years now. And I moved to Breda 1 year in because my wife had a job in Breda. And then as soon as we moved to Breda, she got a job in our old town. So,
okay.
So that's how it goes sometimes.
Yeah. So where did you start when you first moved?
So originally we moved to Dordrecht, which is probably, it's like right on the, it's really close to Rotterdam. About, I could give you the distances, but that's not going to give you the right impression of what people here actually think about the distances and stuff. Yeah. But it's actually one of the oldest cities in the Netherlands, and was what it's considered the first Dutch city, because it's where rebellious Dutch provinces gathered. Mm-hmm. To, or counts and lords and all that, mm-hmm. people gathered to declare their independence from Spain, and it's where the Dutch Civil War started.
Well, that goes really far back.
Yeah. So I do love that city because it feels historic. You feel like you're walking in a place with things that have been here for 300 years and stuff. And that, even though it's a little bit of a rundown city in the grand scheme of things, it pretty much has its one rise to fame and then Amsterdam and took over, essentially. But yeah, it's cool in that way.
So you said also the province where you are now, mm-hmm. does it also look different architecturally? Like, do you still have like the windmills and...
They took down the windmill in my town. To be more specific, I live in a Breda, but I actually live in what was once its own town that was absorbed by Breda in under Nazi rule, actually. But
okay.
The complete story behind that, but I always think that's interesting. But yeah, the local windmill is taken down, but there are windmills here. I think one big difference is we're not underwater here. We're 3 meters above, or 1 to 3 meters above sea level here.
Oh, wow. You almost on a hill.
Yeah, we're pretty high up there.
So you're not sinking.
Yes. Right. And there we do have one canal that's kind of a moat. The interesting thing about Breda is that it's where the House of Orange, which is the royal family of the Netherlands, they're based in Breda. Their main castle's in Breda. They're from Breda.
Okay.
So that's how Breda is connected to the rest of the Netherlands that way.
Right. And what brought you to the Netherlands in the first place?
So basically, We were living in Austin, Texas.
That's where I am right now.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, we were living in Austin, Texas, and we were trying to get everything together and whatnot, and we decided to have our second child, my daughter, here.
Uh-huh.
And basically, the reality, we were trying to buy a house at this as well, and we were able to get a new build, and we signed the contract and all that. They approved our loan, and then we had to wait for the house to be built.
That was in Austin.
That was technically it was in the suburbs of Austin, Williamson County. It was, if I need to be specific in the podcast.
Oh, it's okay. Not really. I mean, I think nobody besides us two knows where that really is. So
yeah.
So I think it's okay.
Yeah. So, I actually kind of missed a part, but I think I know how I'll get into that part as well, because there are like two pieces of it that come together to sort of get us here. But we'll get to it.
Okay. So, so you were trying to build a house.
We were getting a house built. My wife got pregnant with my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And they just kept delaying and delaying and delaying, and all the other houses around there were built, but ours wasn't being built until she had our daughter.
Mm.
And then as soon as our daughter was built, they finished building the house and were like, oh, I see that my wife is not bringing any income anymore because she just had a baby.
Right.
And so they tried to upsell us the house, and we couldn't afford it, and we lost the house in that way.
Oh, that's really sad.
What really hurts about it, too, is we had a lot of stuff sort of building up to get into that house.
Mm-hmm.
And now that we didn't have the house, we're up to here with everything.
Right.
And barely able to make it, that kind of stuff. And so it was just kind of a downward spiral from there. And mm-hmm. we were just looking at our situation. It was becoming clearer and clearer. We can't afford to live in Metro Austin anymore. I'm a school mm-hmm. teacher. She's a massage therapist. It's not, we weren't making the kind of money to make that possible. My wife was thinking back to when we visited the Netherlands, the Hague specifically, mm-hmm. in 2017, a little after we met. And she's African-American, and what she really felt when she was in the Netherlands was it was the first time she was truly seen as a person and not just as a Black person and all the negative stereotypes that you would get being a Black person in Texas.
Right.
And with that absolute failure of the house and the memory of visiting the Netherlands and feeling really free here,
mm-hmm.
we decided to like look into options.
Okay.
And to leave the U.S. and we explored New Zealand, we explored the Netherlands, and she found a visa path to the Netherlands where essentially as Americans, if you were to try to start your own business, you were allowed to move to the Netherlands and live in the Netherlands.
Is it the DAFT?
It is DAFT, yes.
Yeah.
And so she started businesses before. That was no big deal. That was no problem for her. And she immediately found leads here.
Uh-huh.
And so we sold everything we had, emptied every last bit of savings we had left, little bit that we had in the house, all that stuff we got rid of. We took it all up and we moved to the Netherlands in 2022.
Did you have a place already where you...
We did. We found a place before we moved. Essentially, she... got in touch with various people who are already here, and some of them were happy to tell us how they found a place, which was essentially...
How did you meet them?
Facebook. Facebook is a great place to meet people, at least in the expat community, in my experience. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, yeah. Anyway, she talked to them, found out who they used to find a place, and we contacted those people, and to put it this way, the person we contacted had a overpriced flat that they couldn't sell even in this market, and they were happy to dump it on some Americans who could pay 6 months up front. So
I see.
We got a home.
Nice. Is this where you... No, it's not where you are now.
That's not where we live now. That was our first place in Dordrecht. Essentially, we repeated the process a year later, and this time the realtor made us pay for their services instead of paying up front, but they again gave us a place that was not being advertised well and wasn't selling, that they couldn't give to anyone else. Mm-hmm. And they sold our story and they gave it to us.
Nice.
Oh.
And so why did you then decide on DoorDirect?
Because the people she was talking to were in DoorDirect.
Okay. Got it.
And she was definitely just felt like that was our fated way. And that's all I can really say about it. If I were to do it again, especially because my goal was to be an international school teacher, if I were to do it again, I would have picked a few different places. Not say I do love DoorDirect, and DoorDirect was very, very good to us.
Yeah.
But I'm never going to find a job being an international school teacher in a reasonable distance in DoorDirect or in Breda. There's only one school in Breda. There's one school in Rotterdam.
Yeah, it's really small place.
Exactly.
So do you work remote then, or do you work online?
So eventually what I ended up doing is I found, I ended up becoming a freelancer myself, and I found companies that do online teaching and online tutoring.
Yeah.
And I just started contracting with them, finding clients through them, and built a business with that.
Right.
And so eventually what ended up happening is my wife made the connections to get a regular job here while I had, and I had the freelance business because of my tutoring and stuff.
Could you then just like switch that for the visa?
Yeah, we switched it. It wasn't a problem at all.
Okay. And she got...
She got a contract.
She can work anywhere?
Yeah, she can work anywhere. If you are the spouse of a person on DAFT, then you can work anywhere in the country or any kind of job. You don't need to be sponsored to get a job.
And the DAFT visa, that goes for 2 years, right?
It starts for 2 years, and then you renew it for 5 years.
Ah, okay. And then when you started it, did you get another, like, start the 2 years from scratch?
Yep, we started the 2 years again. So technically, if you are afraid of the renewal, if you and your spouse just keep switching, then you'd make it, basically the goal is to get to 5 years, because after 5 years you can apply for a citizenship or permanent residency.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want a hack that no one's doing, you, if you're switching, you can switch between spouses to get to that 5 year spot without having to worry about renewal, and then apply for permanent residency or citizenship.
I see.
So, yeah. That's one thing.
I mean, yeah. And do you think that's going to be the plan, or?
The plan right now is I'm going to stay on DAFT. I'll renew in a year, and I'm working pretty hard to make sure I'm compliant with everything. So I don't see that being a serious issue. Really, you'll be renewed as long as your business is doing something, and you have 4,500 euros of equity in your business. The requirement is you start a business, and you have 4,500 euros in equity in that business. And as long as you maintain that, you'll be okay. Her plan is to become a Dutch citizen, and renounce her American citizenship, get our kids Dutch citizenship.
Uh-huh.
And then by me being the spouse of a Dutch citizen, I'll be eligible for Dutch citizenship without renouncing.
Okay. And how is your Dutch?
Not great. I'm actually pretty okay at reading in general. It's just something that you kind of, it helps that it's the third closest language out there to English.
Yeah, it is.
The second or third, depending on who you are, on if you count Scots.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm okay. I'm actually pretty okay at reading it in general. I'm not very good at speaking, and part of that's because I spend my days at home talking to my kids in English, because they definitely need me speaking English to them more than they need me speaking Dutch to them. And not just because they need to learn English. I work all night with Americans and Canadians in English. So I just, between the childcare and the work, I just haven't had time to really practice and develop my Dutch to the point, to a point where it needs to be. And so hopefully as they get older, I'll be able to have, I'll finally have time to breathe, take classes, and get to the level I need to get. Because you need to be at A2 or B1 in Dutch to get citizenship or permanent residency. And that is definitely not going to get any easier.
But the thing is, I find for the Dutch, so I think this is easier if you want to learn Dutch, because they speak English so well.
They don't. If you're in the parts of the Netherlands I'm in, they don't speak English as well as you think they do. Or as well as they say they do, for that matter. So And my wife, and I'm brag on her, she's the one who really spearheaded all this, and she's the real inspiration of our story. Mm-hmm. I'm just a straggler, but to be honest, but she really embraces practicing it, speaking it, and learning it a lot more, a lot better than I do. If you are insistent and if you stay, keep speaking Dutch, even when they switch to English, and you really focus on that accent, you can get them to practice with you and you can improve with that. I think a lot, I mean, and I'm one of those people who are not putting the effort that I should be putting in.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you make a true, honest effort to learn, you will learn it and you will have the opportunities to practice.
But did she take classes yet?
Nope.
Or did she just learn it?
She learned on Duolingo.
Oh, Duolingo. Okay,
that's how, that is really the basis of how she learned. From there, she became friends with, in Dordrecht with, people who sent their kids to the same school we sent our son to. And she practices a lot with them and learns a lot with them. And and anytime she has an opportunity to talk to someone in Dutch, when she was a massage therapist with her clients, she was the only person in the building who spoke Dutch to the clients.
Right. Okay.
The only non-Dutch person who spoke Dutch anyway. And she just used those opportunities to keep practicing, mm-hmm, to keep using it. And it's hard to say where she's at right now. I wish I had more to say, but it's just, at least I'm getting okay at reading it and teaching in it. I have to teach in it sometimes.
What do you mean?
I have a local student.
One? Okay.
I have he goes to a regular Dutch school and the mom just needs someone to like help him out. Cause he has
English.
Not in English, no, just in school in general.
Okay.
And right. The reality is that he clearly is more comfortable in Dutch than he is in English. So I'm always like translating exercises into Dutch.
Okay.
Writing what I'm thinking and explaining it in Dutch and just doing a lot of translation stuff like that, which is, it's just super interesting teaching money the local way when it's like you have no experience with using commas like that.
Right. Oh,
but
that's
what I'm teaching right now. And that's what I'm doing right now. And that's been a fun experience, definitely helped kind of more reason to learn, but it's still, I need to sit down and actually do the apps, do Duolingo or do Babbel or Busuu. Busuu was really good for my wife. Babbel helped me a lot. That's how I got my foundation, but it's just, I have not had time or the energy to do it.
Right And like, but also like if you work from home, if you're not like surrounded by Dutch people the whole time,
exactly, yeah,
probably harder. So how did you guys make like friends?
Basically through our son's school. My wife just a social butterfly, just went talking to people constantly, and we met, and that's how we met one couple who we're really close to and our kids are close to, and we do a lot of stuff with them, and they've just been really kind. Most of the friends we make are all of them are either married to an immigrant or immigrants themselves. We have one friend who I think is actually Dutch, but most of who we meet and talk to, it's been through the expat groups. She and I both are really good about, oh, you just moved to the Netherlands and you have no idea what you're doing. We moved to the Netherlands and we had no idea what we're doing. Here's what we did. And we've been really successful at building relationships with people through that.
Okay.
And helping guide people through that, because it is so, so scary to leave, at least speaking as an American, it's scary no matter what, but it is very scary leaving America, leaving the prosperity that everyone and everywhere in the world is talking about you have in America. And to make that final leap is really hard and a really brave thing to do. So when she and I see people who are seeing through the BS and trying to get here, get somewhere, we both jump up and we say, that's great. Here's how you do it. I didn't think I could do it, but I did it. This is what I did. And you can do it too.
And so what was for you in the beginning then the hardest part?
I'm lucky that the visa we picked is so straightforward. It could have been a lot worse than what it ended up being. There were elements of finding legitimate work for me especially. and work that was nearby. It took them 6 months to recognize my teaching credentials, so I could even just teach in international schools here, and the schools wouldn't talk to me until I had that credential.
How did you get that?
I sent them my college transcript, or I said I applied. I said I have these licenses. Mm-hmm. And then they waited 5 months to try to ask my university for the transcripts. But my university was like, only the person can ask for the transcripts. And then when they finally understood that, I had to send them my transcripts. And then it took a month. So as I was a licensed elementary school teacher, I went to school to be an elementary school teacher. So that in and of itself gave me the ability mm-hmm. to teach primary school in international settings here. If my Dutch were B2... Mm-hmm. I probably could teach in Dutch schools too. They need teachers here like they need them in the United States as well. So
yeah, in Germany it's the same. Like it's very needed. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, no, people are leaving education all over the place, and that's I don't know of a place that doesn't have a shortage with it. I guess Ireland's acting like they don't have a shortage, but they probably do.
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, so. Yeah, that's how I was able to get my credential and all that. But yeah, so me initially finding a job, and when I couldn't find it, coming up with the idea of the online tutoring with American companies, finding those companies, and then once that got rolling, it wasn't a problem. It's like a lot of the difficulties I have here are the same difficulties I would have had in the United States.
Okay.
I'm not a very social person. I'm not very good at meeting people myself. It's no surprise I don't meet many people here. You know, there's a little bit of like the money thing, but the reality is that we are doing better here, making less money than we did in the United States. And that's
because everything is cheaper.
It's not even that everything's cheaper. We're in the Netherlands, one of the most expensive countries in Europe, you know? And but it's that the expenses don't pile up when you don't need the car, when your health insurance doesn't cost $500 a month. When the food is actually a little cheaper, I think, especially. Yeah, it's hard to tell with inflation. I'm not sure anymore, but I heard some comparisons lately that made me say, oh, it actually is cheaper here. But like, only thing you're really paying for here is your rent, which is high, but not Austin high, but it's high.
Yeah.
Yeah, your rent, a little bit of health insurance. Not even really childcare. I mean, for my daughter, most of that's actually provided for. And my son, it's free when they turn 4. Actually, it's kind of free when they turn 2.5, depending on where you live as well.
I see.
That's its own complication. And depending on how long you need it. There are ways to get some education for your child starting at 2.
So you only needed to buy a bike or like a monthly pass?
Yeah, the bike and the transit passes and stuff. And credit's harder to come by here, so you're not racking up the credit. That was definitely a problem we ran into in the U.S. as well. And yeah, it just doesn't pile up as high, so you need less and you get by just fine with that.
Yeah, you get. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's what it comes down to, especially when you have two people working. If you have two people working full time, I really believe you can be okay here unless you're trying to live in Amsterdam. And then the problem is that you tried to move to New York and got to make it in New York. That's how it is.
Yeah, but I think it's nice that like you don't have to worry about the daycare, you know?
Yeah.
That was
nice. In a lot of ways, yeah. And it's nefarious because some of it's because you're a foreigner. You brought this child who doesn't speak Dutch. They need to learn Dutch. And so they provide 4.5 days of childcare so that your child learns Dutch. But at the same time, it's still super helpful and it's still a lot cheaper. Like the American daycare for my son, it was $1,200 a month. Here, she goes to childcare for 4.5 days. It would be 550 euros, and the city, the county, Clemente, gives us 500 of that.
Oh, nice.
That's actually one advantage of the Netherlands. That it's immigrant sentiment here is bad enough. I don't need to make it worse.
So I had another two Americans. They got to Amsterdam with a DAFT visa.
Yeah.
I think it was for her the main reason why she wanted to leave was because of the politics. And then I didn't say anything because it did not even like click at that moment. But I was like, wait, the Netherlands politics at the moment are very bad.
Yeah, yeah. But this is what I have to say about the politics is that they are bad. And yet my wife feels more accepted here than she ever did in the United States of America. And so there's the populism there. And it does. Yeah, I think that's true. When you go in, when you dig into any country, you will find the skeletons and they will be gross and terrible and awful. Mm-hmm. For me personally, I love when I find that. I love when I find out that you are just as ignorant and hickish and uncultured as my small town in Tennessee.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that, because that's life. That is what life really is. That's what people are.
I guess in the big cities, they're always like, oh, yeah, everybody's welcome, right?
Yeah. We're all like, except Amsterdam currently has a very active and loud campaign to keep tourists out of Amsterdam.
Oh, really?
Yes. It's all over the news here, and it's like clicking to me. Oh wait, this is a continuous story that keeps coming up. They just you can't build any new hotels in Amsterdam because they don't want any more tourists. They have like a whole website that they're like building up to try to keep like drunk crazy tourists from partying in Amsterdam.
But like all the other tourists are welcome, or just not the
I'm not in Amsterdam. I don't completely know what's going on there. I don't have the greatest impression of the city, but yeah, I don't know what's it's like. They have this campaign going on with that, which is insane. It's like also they're trying to make the airport smaller and stuff. It's like they have all this traffic coming in, but so much of the country and so much of the sentiment of it right now is just less people, bring in less people, like just less
Dutch.
Tourists.
Only the Dutch.
Yes. Yes, definitely that. Uh-huh. Ooh, I have a fun story. I don't know if it'll fit in. I'm just going to tell it, and you can do what you want with it.
Okay.
There was the one thing that's really cool here is they have local stands selling fish, and it's usually like once a week kind of thing. Fry the kipling here, amazing. Mm-hmm. So I went to a stand to get the kipling, and I tried to do it in Dutch, like mangled, awful Dutch. And the person who was there was like offended that I was like trying to use Dutch with her. And I was trying to explain, I live here, my kids go to school here, not going away anytime soon. I know you could speak English, but I do need to practice. And she's like, oh no, Dutch is impossible to learn. You shouldn't even bother to learn it. And it's not worth the time. It's just this, our own stupid little language. And like that interaction and like discovering another anecdote as well is like the way the Dutch treated the Indonesians when they were over Indonesia, where even if the local Indonesians learn Dutch, why does Indonesia have like no connection to Dutch compared to like West Africa that still has French forced on them, even though they hate French? And the reason is because even the ones who bother to learn Dutch, like the Dutch people, would not speak Dutch to them. They would speak Malay to them or something along those lines. And it's like they're very protective of their language. It's like their language is like there's an attitude there, and you don't see it much in English because why would they say it in English? But it's almost like they believe their language is only for them, and it's not for, like even the biggest nationalists, like sometimes you get that pushback for trying to learn Dutch, and it's
like, no,
it's really interesting.
It's only for you when you are born there.
Yeah, it's not for not these for you, foreigners who will...
People who just moved there.
Yeah, in a way, yeah. And maybe that's not true, but that is something I've just kind of been noticing and observing behind the scenes here. Completely wild, not something at all that I would expect.
Yeah, no, and I mean, you still want to learn it though, right? Or I mean,
oh yeah, no, I'm still going to learn it. I have to. I live here. My kids speak Dutch better than English, especially my son. Like I got to do it. It has to happen. No matter what they say, but I definitely feel that pushback and that resistance to speaking it and. Like, even being interested in learning it, it's like, you don't even want me to, even though it's like, don't tell me it's hard. It's not hard. It obviously isn't hard. It's me who's failing, not your language.
It's funny. Like, I mean, it is because small towns are totally different than...
Yeah, no, there's definitely that sentiment of rural versus urban, and I think I have not seen a place where that is not a stereotypical thing you can say about them. Like, the rural people are definitely feel very threatened by the way that where the world is moving. They want to do something to change it and to stop it. And yeah, I should add, Breda is not that small, but it is. It's not a big city, but it. It's three times the size of where I came from.
What's the population like?
180,000.
Okay. All right, that's not that small.
Yeah, and Dordrecht also is like 120,000. Yeah, okay. Like when I think small town, I think 20,000 to 50,000or smaller. So I should clarify.
Yeah. Okay, so because I mean, we just talked about this. Is there anything else that you still find frustrating?
Right now that I find frustrating, a lot of it's like that personal thing of like, I need to be a better immigrant kind of thing. Uh-huh. Particularly with the language, a little bit of the customs and stuff, like leave my window open or stop spending money wildly and disposably kind of stuff.
What do you mean with leave your window open, not hanging curtains?
Especially in the Protestant parts of the country, you have to leave your front curtains open because you have nothing to hide. Therefore, you should be leaving that open.
Yeah, I seen that, but I never get this why this is still so important to them.
It's what they do. I think it's odder where I am because that Protestant pressure was not historically here. Uh-huh. And yet it's still a thing here somewhat. Though actually they cheat. They do cheat. They put a little obscure stuff in the window. It's like a half open curtain, stuff like that. But there is an expectation that your curtain needs to be open a little bit.
Because also like right lower level, you can look right into the room, right?
Yep. And that's just how it is. It's like if you have it all closed, that means something secret and bad is going on behind those curtains.
I just gotta go to another room, right? Where you don't.
Yeah, well, obviously that's what you actually do, but gotta keep up appearances and stuff. One cute thing that I can't stand is I really don't like the way they do landscaping, like in your garden area, your backyard area. Your yard needs to have grass in it. That is just a normal thing. You got to mow that grass, and it takes a little bit of work, but you got to have that grass. And here, they just replace it all with turf.
Oh, like AstroTurf?
Yeah.
Like plastic?
Yeah, just plastic, fake-looking grass. They do that a lot. Almost all the yards are that. And I find it so funny that, like, people like to give Americans crap for playing soccer on turf, and it's like, you literally play in your backyard on turf. Why are you complaining about this?
This makes me feel a little bit better because I'm always complaining about the AstroTurf when I see it in my neighborhood. I'm like, those stupid Americans. You know, it's like all plastic.
Oh, God,
it's all plastic,
To do it to your whole American yard. Ooh. Maybe it's a worldwide thing.
Everywhere. Okay.
Yeah, that's definitely a big thing here that I didn't notice until I moved here. And it's probably because the yards are smaller and stuff. But At first I laughed, and then I was like, oh, they're serious. Why are they doing
it's
that?
Everywhere. Okay. Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. And what do you really like?
I like living in a place that is different than where I came from.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if that's specific to the Netherlands or anything, but I like when I have a little subtle discovery of something that is different about the Netherlands than it was in the United States. I love watching my son grow up in an environment that is almost alien to what I grew up to and seeing him develop in that environment.
Mm-hmm.
Do
you mean with that? Do you mean just like culturally that it's more mixed?
Like the language stuff, the openness of his schools, like one of those big things that I'm always like fascinated, like just love. Like when I see my student, I just walk into the school. I don't check in. The doors aren't locked. The gates aren't locked. I just go in, do my thing, and leave.
Right.
Essentially. And it's like there's that openness to it. There's the holidays and stuff that they celebrate, the emphasis on some of their different traditions and whatnot that they teach, the openness of Christianity within the schools themselves. Not that I like that, and it would offend me in the United States. It really would.
Yeah.
Seeing here, it's like that's a different place and that's a different world and that's just a different way of doing things. And every time I notice like one of those little differences, it just makes me be like, yeah, I'm happy I'm here to see that and experience it and think about the world in that different way. I guess it is hard for me to like explain. Like we were talking earlier about the, like, you know, find the ugly face of the country and that, and how exciting that is to me. And it really mm-hmm. is exciting, like good or bad, seeing it as it is. It's like, that's cool. I'm glad I get to see that. I do appreciate, like, especially when I lived in Dordrecht, I appreciated so much just being able to go down the cobblestone streets, look at all the old buildings, and really feel like I was in a place that was different and also mm-hmm. very old.
Yeah.
And just being surrounded by all that history and just having that as just, this is my life. And mm-hmm. that is something I really enjoyed. Where I currently live is a lot more. It was all built up in the 70s and 80s.
Okay.
We have our old village with a 500-year-old inn that is now just a restaurant. And by restaurant, I mean a bar. But, you know, it's not as big here as it was there, but still just seeing all those, that different history and stuff is really cool. I do enjoy the trains because I've always been a train nerd. And mm-hmm. having that as a part of my regular life, that my son has been on, you know, we go on trains like once every week or two. When I was in America, I never went on trains.
Here, I was like thinking the same. It's like, we should go on a train ride mm-hmm. just to San Antonio, you know, not yeah. even far. But I mean, I wouldn't even know really where to go to the station.
I mean, it's basically, I looked it up with where you're at. It's one train 3 times a week, and it goes San Antonio and Dallas, and it has weird hours and all that stuff. Yeah, and you know, also a train that's like 50 years old that would make the Polish trains look modern, you know?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's just, it's really hard to put into words what I like about it. In some ways, it could just be the momentum of I did it, and therefore I stick with it. And just that accomplishment of feeling like, yeah, I'm here, I'm taking care of myself, my family's taking care of ourselves, I built this business, that kind of stuff. And that makes me feel good too.
So can I ask you, I did not ask you that when you mentioned in the beginning how you got this, but how long did your process take from making the decision to leave the United States to actually move?
4 months.
Oh, that was quick.
I don't take people seriously who have 5-year plans. 5-year plans don't happen. 5-year plans become 10-year plans.
Yeah, but still, like 4 months is like, all right, we're booking the flights tomorrow for in.
Yep, we booked the flight and we did it.
Okay.
Yep. And it's so scary and hard to move to a different place in general. Not just Americans, just mm-hmm. in general. You got to just kind of, when the opportunity comes and you have decided to do it, you just got to do it. You can't wait till you are fluent.
Yeah,
in
no,
Norwegian
I mean, that will never happen.
It's not going to happen. Like, I'm blessed that I grew up in a place that speaks English, and English is the international language that everyone is forced to learn and everyone is exposed to throughout life. That is an advantage, and that is not something that should be discounted, especially if you're not moving to a French-speaking place or a Spanish-speaking mm-hmm. place. Yeah, that, and that's my message to anyone who's like really thinking about trying out living in a different place, is just, you don't wait for that perfect time, because that perfect time never come, and there will always be an excuse not to do it, because it's always dangerous, it's always scary, and in a way it's always stupid,
and you can always make excuses.
Exactly. Even if it ends up bad, you will grow from the experience, and you will know that I did that, and isn't it amazing that I did that, isn't it amazing that I tried. And you will always gain something by going to a different place and truly living in that different place and doing your day-to-day life in that different place, making friends, seeing how different people live, seeing all the different things at the grocery store, the different ways they celebrate different things, and celebrating those holidays too. Like, it just gives you such a bigger understanding of the human experience. Yeah, I think that's super valuable. And anyone can benefit from doing that. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And did you ever had like a moment where you said like, hey, maybe it's a better idea if we're going back?
No.
No?
No, definitely not. And those moments do definitely come, but there is a definite momentum that went with it. And I know a lot of people do this kind of thing and they do end up like going back and their kids are fine and whatnot. But I think about like, I mean, my son here when he's 2.5, my daughter was 8 months old, roughly. And Like, this is what they know. I'm not going to take that away from them.
No, I mean, for them, that's at this age, they adapt super quick.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I just, and, you know, they've done all this work to learn this language that only exists in this tiny part of the world. I'm not going to waste that by leaving. And I know that, especially with the way I moved, there's nothing left in the U.S. for me.
Okay.
Like, I will be, I'm starting from scratch here. I sell everything, I go back. I'm going to be starting from scratch in the United States again as well. Mm-hmm. And what good will that do me? How will that, it will not make me more comfortable. It will bring me back to the stresses of living there and dealing with the gun drills, the fake kindness, the consumerism, and the keeping up with the Joneses and the way that's there. And I admit, some of that does exist here, but as a foreigner, you don't see it as much as you do when you're a native.
Yeah.
You don't have the family pressure that is telling you to adapt and to do what the culture is telling you to.
Yeah.
When you're this far away in that way too. Like, yeah, no, I just, I don't really think about moving back because it's just, I am content with what I have. I'm happy with what I built and I don't really think there's anything left in the US for me.
Okay. But is there anything that you miss?
One advantage of living in the 21st century is that you can get most everything you could ever want.
Right.
Online. I'm actually really good at making American recipes. The secret is sugar.
Yeah.
And yeah, corn. Right. The other secret is corn. Corn and sugar. You will be able to make anything from America taste American.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of that stuff of like, well, you know, I'm in front of a computer no matter where I'm at. Computers look the same everywhere. Last time I went back, I was so disappointed by everything because it was like I already adapted mostly to what I had here. And it was like burger. Like a lot of, I used to eat out a lot when I was in the United States. Here I don't. There's nowhere to eat out at. The food sucks here.
Right. the food sucks.
Yeah, the food, hey, eating out is about the experience of being around people. It's not about actually eating food here.
What about the frikandel?
The what?
Frikandel?
Oh, I know what you're talking about. I know. Oh, wow. It's like I just realized I've been mispronouncing that horribly. Yeah, no, my daughter loves that.
Yeah.
And it's pretty good here. I also enjoy Bitterballen. I've talked about the Kipling already. Hakkelslag always makes me laugh that is a normal food here.
Yes. And what about, I always love flan.
Uh-huh. That's not a, in America.
No, it's not without the N. It's fla.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Yeah. I know what you mean.
The soupy
pudding. But basically pudding, yes. And I was finally brave enough to try that about a few months ago. And I've been trying to get it, but I don't eat it enough and they don't touch it. So it's like, it's pretty cool. But it's also interesting how that's in literally all the baked goods. And I love the bread here as well. That is a plus. I miss Chipotle in the United States. That's the one thing that... I'm serious. It's the one thing that when I went back to the United States, I was like, oh, yeah, that was actually good.
Okay. But you can. No, probably Mexican food is.
Does not exist here.
It's not popular. No.
You first have to deal with any foreign food. You have to deal with the locals interpreting the foreign food in their own way. So that's already one barrier. By the way, burgers is another thing that they don't do well. Don't do the way I like. I can't say they don't do it well because they do it their way. And that's not wrong. But it's not the way I like my burgers.
I get it. Got it.
But, you know, you got to deal with the fact that they're butchering it in the Dutch way. Always funny to see. But still, they're doing that. And then Mexican is already not something they're going to try in the first place.
Yeah.
So put those two together. And, no, finding an actual good Mexican restaurant here, or even burrito here, is very, very hard.
Maybe in Amsterdam, I guess.
I think actually the biggest one, there's one in Rotterdam that people tend to like. And then I think there's one maybe in Eindhoven or something like that, that people like, but yeah, it's a hard thing to find and it's not something I seek out too much. So yeah, that's something I miss.
Do you miss the hot weather in Austin?
No.
How could you?
No, I'm a weirdo who actually likes cold, snowy weather. The weather here is actually not cold enough for me.
But it's rainy.
It's rainy. And I appreciate it because I've lived in dry places. And, you know, when raining is a blessing. It's a miracle. It means that life can go on. And so I see it. And I'm not Dutch because I like the rain. If I were actually trying to adapt, I would be like, oh, no, yeah, the rain's terrible. I hate it. Oh, man, I can't believe it's raining again. It's so awful.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess, and it's good. Mm-hmm.
I guess in a lot of ways I miss driving. I actually do enjoy driving, but that's, again, something I need to do better. I need to just get my driver's license here and spend the money on it. And
is that, would that be a new test? Mm-hmm.
It's or starting over from scratch.
Like, switch it? Oh, right. And it's expensive?
Yeah, it's very expensive. It's like, I think the average cost is like 3,500 euros to get your license.
But would you need to take lessons as well? Or can you just...
Yep, you have to take lessons.
Well, but you don't need to take like more lessons because you already know how to drive.
No, but I don't know how to drive like a Dutch person. I don't know how to drive and let my car just casually roll into the crosswalk because that's how you drive Dutch. I don't know how to drive, go backwards by just looking at my rear view mirror. You know?
What? Come on.
That's the kind of stuff they'll ding you on the test.
But, right. Oh, the test. Well, the test here is like you can do either way. Like either you look into the camera or you look into the mirror or like turn around.
That's not what the people who've taken the test here tell me.
Okay. So it's the old school.
Yeah.
But isn't it in general more like still... feels a little bit more back then, like 10 years ago or 20 years ago? Or is it pretty modern?
I mean, my banking is done completely and totally on my phone and doesn't even have branches in that way. My identification verification is completely, you know, it's through an app.
Everything is digitalized.
Everything is a lot more digitalized here in a way that would make a true Texan like sick in their heart. But I know I've heard in other countries it can feel like very much in the past. Here there might be like some cultural developments that are a little bit behind the US in a way, but technologically, no, I don't feel like it's behind the US in any way. I feel very much either at the same or ahead, depending. I mean, they don't get cash, doesn't really exist in the Netherlands.
Oh, I see. So it's pretty similar.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
got it. Is there anything that you don't get used to?
I feel it's not, I can't say I'm truly adapted to a Dutch way of life. It's more that I'm very ignorant of what I don't know here, and I'm okay with that.
Okay.
I think is the best way to describe it, would definitely offend some people that I live that way, but that's the truth. Like
that's the bliss of being a foreigner sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. And definitely something I've learned to just kind of like lean on sometimes as well. Is like, oh, you know, I'm just a ignorant, gun-loving American, you know? Well, what do I know about a fondue dinner for Christmas kind of thing and little stuff like that? It's just, yeah, there's the language barrier stuff, but I always see that as like, well, that's just something I got to do better at. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I can manage, I can handle, and doesn't stress me out, really. Google Translate exists.
2 years is not a long time.
Yeah.
To live at a place. So in 2 years more, you'll be way better at it.
Yeah, definitely. And even though I would say I don't speak Dutch, it's like I know a lot more Dutch than I ever do French.
Okay.
Kind of thing. And that's what I did. That's what I learned in school. I know I think when you're surrounded by it, you absorb things and you do get better. It's just not in a useful way, but I can figure out what my son is saying when he's completely speaking Dutch. Right. And he doesn't, and he has a speech impediment on top of that, and I can still figure it out
because right.
I'm surrounded by this stuff. I can read the subtitles on their kids shows and I know what's going on in the show. Today I was reading a book in Dutch with him and it's like, yeah, easy translation for me, no problem. I know exactly.
That's a great idea of like learning it, kids
books. Oh yeah, absolutely. That's and that's definitely something I, when I ever have the time to learn, that is something I want to do more, is like translate the kids books and stuff like that. Especially like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is one that I need to pick up, because that one I can do, because I started doing it once and it was like, oh yeah, actually. And I've never read the book before, but it's all very obvious and easy to see. So yeah, that is definitely but yeah, there are other people who figure it out in a year, and definitely in our community the expectation is you'll learn the language 6 months after you move there, kind of thing. Except none of us actually do that.
I guess it probably depends on how much you go out, like what your surroundings is. If you work in an actual office with locals, like all these
and
things.
You embrace speaking the local language with those locals, because that's also important. Here you can get away with working completely in a Dutch environment and forcing them all to speak English.
Right. Okay.
But yeah, you know, you do have to still make that effort and stuff, but.
I think also we're coming to an end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for your time. Thanks for telling me your story.
Absolutely. Thank you for talking to me. It's good to meet you, Victoria, and to talk about my experience. And
thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes, that was Richard. Thanks for listening to this episode of Worlds Collide. And if you are interested in being a guest on the show, then don't hesitate to reach out to me. It's worldscollide123pod@gmail.com. Or you can just find me on Instagram, Threads, or TikTok and follow up through there. I would be so honored to hear from you. Also, if you just want to let me know something else, please do so. And yeah, before I forget, I just wanted to let you know that there is a link in the show notes for more DAFT visa information. So if this is something that you are interested in, then there you go, in the show notes. Okay, and then until then, I hope you tune in again next week for a new episode. Bye!